Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Back again for another week.
Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Sorry.
Guess who's back? A lot has happened.
So much has happened.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it? No. Yes.
Not really. Because I'm interested to see when the dust settles. Oh, I keep hitting myself with this. I need to get a stand. I don't have a stand because I'm not home. But
I was going to say.
When the dust settles, like, I obviously we both love Kamala Harris.
Yeah, we do.
We both love her. You know, we are with her.
Yep.
I don't know what her slogan is yet, but I had to log off because I'm just going to say this. I hope the Democrats hadn't fucked themselves royally, because this is what we do. We get close to winning and then we fuck it up. So I hope we haven't done that.
Okay. And all of my white women friends, we know what we got to do, right?
Because it is on gather, y'all.
Yeah. We got to gather our brethren. Okay. Okay. We got to take to our people and we've got to say, we keep fucking this up. Let us not fuck it up this time. Yes.
Yeah.
We could do it. You guys, we could.
Because you know what? We need our white people to be as ruthless as the other white people on the other side.
Listen.
And
gangsta. Let's pretend that we're organizing a woman's march. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And it's up to us. Of course it is. Right.
And pink pussy hats.
Pink pussy. We're making pussy hats for Kamala. Okay.
Yeah. Because the black women going to show up. We're going to do what we got to do.
Yeah. Like, of course you are.
We're going to do it. Like, I mean, oh God. I would have such a lady boner. Oh God, if we got 8 years of her.
Eight years.
My God, that would be so amazing. So anyway, on that note, but we'll have more to say in a couple of weeks because I just want the dust to settle and for the foolishness to start, because the foolishness is going to start.
It is, y'all. It is.
Let's not do to Kamala what we did to Hillary.
Nope.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Let's just put her in office, you guys.
And let's be clear.
Yeah.
The majority of black women voted for Hillary. They were in love with Hillary Clinton.
Oh,
they just did what had to be done.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So if we're going to be in the trenches together, we got to do what has to be done, people. Get out and vote and tell your friends to vote.
Yep.
And stop with this bullshit, because we can move on and then we can get back to fighting like normal people versus the shit that they're trying to do to our country. So
can you imagine the actual free country we would live in if she became president? Like the actual freedoms we would actually have.
But it also that means we have to keep the House and the Senate. Like, there's a lot of work to be done. And don't just think you're going to vote once and all your problems going to be solved. Mm-hmm. Because the other side, it's like, I'm not a Star Wars person. I'm a Borg. I'm a Star Trek person. So the Borg, just think, the Borg takes over everything. So the other side is acting like the fucking Borg.
Yeah.
So let's not act like they're not the Borg. Okay.
Right. Right. They're the Borg. So whatever
it
is you're voting for against the Borg, just like vote against Borg. Vote against Borg. Hashtag.
Anti-Borg. Yeah. Like, let's not do this. It's the Borg. They're acting like they touch you and then you get turned into a Borg. Okay. So we're not doing this.
Total side note. I went to an event with my family. It's a thing. It was very exciting. They had a little game for the kiddos. We're going to play the opening theme to TV shows. And whoever guesses, and guess who raised his hand really high when Star Trek came on? That's right, my child.
Aww,
did you proud.
Be proud.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yours. Yeah. Yours. I love it. But
well, for you.
So do your part, people. So we should get started. This week I am first, and I need to get back to a little murdering, because again, I love a murderess. It's not a very long one, but it is a doozy, and it is politically adjacent.
Interesting.
So this is interesting. So my notorious woman this week is Becky O'Donnell.
Okay. I have no idea. Okay.
Yeah, this is, I was like, what? Okay. Becky O'Donnell was born Rebecca Lynn O'Donnell in 1971, 72. It was hard for me to find her birth year and date, so because what she did was so notorious. But she basically is a typical looking Midwestern white woman, American. But despite her being an all-American looking normal white lady, she got some dark thoughts. She might have a little Belle Gunness inside of her, makes her a wonderful woman to cover. Because as a young woman, she was arrested and put on probation for theft. Again, that's not that unusual. A lot of people, who knows? Right. It sounds like she comes from a very humble background. Maybe she was stealing something out of the Family Dollar or the Piggly Wiggly. I don't know. I'm just assuming she's from the South or the Midwest. Just
okay.
And there is a store called the Piggly Wiggly, people. Okay? There really is.
I mean, now, I know that because of driving Miss Daisy. But anyways.
The Piggly Wiggly is a real thing. Just like Winn and Dixie. Okay. My Southernness is definitely coming out.
Yeah. Now, it's on fire today. Go on.
Yeah. So Becky, and her name is Becky. Yes.
She's Becky. Oh my God, Becky.
In 2007... her ex-husband, Jeff, accused her of trying to hire someone to kill her, to kill him, for the insurance money.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Jeff was like, I heard she was trying to kill me for my $50,000 worth of insurance.
Damn.
So much so, he took it seriously. So they called authorities and authorities pulled her aside. And she's like, yeah, I said it, but I was really drunk.
Okay.
So I remember I said Becky was a white lady from Midwest, South, and white privilege for your ass. The authorities are like, okay, no charges are going to be filed because she didn't actually go through it or like actually set it up. But they did warn her. They said, if something happens to your ex-husband, then you're going to be the first suspect. So,
okay.
Becky was like, maybe I should move on. So sometime after that, Becky met a man by the name of Tim Loggins, a former law enforcement officer of his own, and they started dating.
Okay.
If you think of like Midwestern white people, you see this couple. He's kind of like burly, like a teddy bear kind of guy with a beard. I love the guys with the beards now. I love that the guys are growing the beards out. So he's like
never say that in front of my husband. Go on.
Oh, so they got together and they had been together for a few years when Tim reconnected with an old friend of his, a woman by the name of Linda Collins Smith.
Okay.
Now, in an interview, Tim said of Linda, quote, she and I shared political views, had a lot of common interests and goals from a legislative perspective. And that was the basis of us restarting our friendship, end quote. Okay. Now, Tim had known Linda when they were in grade school and high school. Then they sort of lost touch and then they reconnected. He said basically of Linda, we had known each other our whole lives. So because of that, and they were just friends, it was nothing like romantic. Okay. So because of that, it would make sense that Becky, as Tim's fiance at this point, would hit it off with Linda as well, right?
Theoretically.
Now, Linda had come from a very humble background, very poor. Basically, she didn't have running water until she was in her teens. So, like, just very typical, poor, working class woman. But she had gone to school. She had become a real estate agent and she had married a man by the name of Phil. So, and then not only that, after that, Linda got into politics as a local, like, successful woman, businesswoman in Arkansas.
Okay.
So, solidly middle, slight upper middle class, like, Linda's doing really well for herself. Yeah. So, and Tim doesn't seem to be doing bad either. Like, he seems to be doing, again, they were in grade school together. So, and sounded like politically they were aligned. So, and obviously, so was Becky. So, they're all, like, You guess it, Republicans.
Yeah. Waiting for it. Here we go.
Now, when Becky met Linda, they started hanging out together. And Tim even said of them that they basically became inseparable. Wherever Linda went, Becky was there and vice versa. They were always together. They called each other sisters, even though they weren't blood relations. So, now in 2010, Linda got into, like I said, state politics, and she won a seat in the state house as a Democrat, serving from 2011 to 2013.
Wait, as a shortly Democrat?
Shortly after she got her seat, she switched parties from Democrat to Republican.
She's an asshole. I hate her.
Decrying what she saw as the Democratic Party's increasingly liberal stance on social issues. So as
we've
a Republican,
always been liberal on social issues. That's what we are. That's who we are.
Yeah, there should be. They need to write into law that if you get elected as one thing and then you switch, then you need to have run again under the
new election. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree with
but
that.
But this was at the state level. So maybe, you know, and this is in Arkansas. So now, as a Republican, she ran a pro-life platform, sponsored a controversial bathroom bill, and sought to repeal the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare.
I hate her so much. Okay, go on.
This is Linda. This is very typical. This is the kind of people I grew up with. This is very typical of like Midwestern white people. It's so funny because they said that, you know, working class and middle class white people and working class and middle class black people basically have the same views, but they're in different parties, usually because racism.
It's like that Jeopardy SNL sketch with Tom Hanks and his red Make America Great Again. And then like the two black people and they're all like, you can't trust the government. And they're like, no, you can't trust the government.
Right.
Oh my God.
Right. Yep.
That's amazing.
But then when it comes down to it, yep.
Yeah.
And then they both will say that they're religious and they go to churches and the churches are probably segregated. That welcome to America. So anywho, so back to Becky and Linda's relationship. So again, the two became inseparable. They were basically BFFs from the time that, you know, and again, by this time, when she met Linda, Becky had been with Tim for a couple years. So it was pretty serious.
Okay.
And so much so that when Linda ran, when she was in politics and she became a state senator in 2014 and 2018, Becky, who started off being her like personal assistant in a lot of ways, also became a campaign aide. She was an integral part of both elections.
Okay.
And then after she left politics, Becky also got a managerial role in some of Linda's businesses.
Okay.
So in 2019, Linda was primaried. So basically she had switched parties. And so then because of that, she didn't want to run against another Republican. So then she switched and changed. It's a little, it's not convoluted, but it's a little bit, it's not that complicated. But then she then had to run again. And that whole the bathroom bill came to bite her because she was primaried and had and lost basically.
Yeah, bitch.
And she also got some enemies, I think, when she changed parties. I think that doesn't go down too well with people.
No.
I would be upset if I were your colleague and then you did that. So, but she basically was in the state government for about 10 years.
Damn.
But in 2019, she was primaried. And so she was out. She lost her seat in the Capitol. In the state capitol. And she also was newly divorced from Phil Smith.
Okay.
Her husband of 20 years.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. Phil was a circuit court judge. So again, they had done very well. And during that time, Becky O'Donnell attended as a witness for her divorce proceeding. So again, because they're BFFs. Now, newly divorced, Linda moved back to her hometown of Pocahontas, Arkansas, and she began dating and looking for a job, a lobbying job. Things seemed to be different, but moving in a positive way, even for the two friends, because she still had businesses. Like apparently her and Phil had like a, I think it was a Motel 6 or something like that. And then they sold it. And then they opened up like a smaller sort of non-chain motel. Okay. So she had local business, and you know, obviously, she when you become a state senator, the money's not bad either. So
it's like Schitt's Creek, but like full of hate instead of love. Got it.
Exactly. So, but you know, she was building up her life again, and she started dating. And you know, Becky was right there with her. She started managing some of the business aspects. And also at that time during the divorce, Tim also became, he was able to sign things for, on Linda's behalf. Like if she was out of town, that kind of thing. Okay. So, you know, that kind of thing, that's how much they trusted each other. And like I said, Linda was starting to, date again, and you know, things seemed to be going well, and she was actually out of town. She went to DC to talk about a lobbying job and that kind of thing. So fast forward to May of 2019, Becky and Tim are driving to funeral services for Linda.
What?
Linda had been killed, and so the police pulled them over and pulled their AR-15s, this is according to Tim, out on both of them, and then arrested Becky for Linda's murder.
Oh my God.
Because a few weeks earlier, on June 4th, 2019, Linda had been found stabbed to death in her home. Her body was discovered by her family members, who found her rolled up in a blanket and stuffed under the tarp in her driveway.
Oh my God.
Now, her family, so you wonder, you're like, what? Why would they arrest Becky? I'm going to tell you why. So the family, and unfortunately her two children, Butch and, oh God, what's the daughter's name? It's a very like Southern, I'll find her name. They found their mom. Like, I just can't it's horrifying.
That's awful.
And they said they had become worried because she had gone to DC for this lobbying interview and they had talked to her and she said, oh, I think it went really well and da da da. And so they were like, well, just text us when you get home. So she was supposed to return and they hadn't heard from her. They were calling and they hadn't heard from her. So they finally got, and she just, that's not like them. That's not like their mom, like not to answer the call. So they went over there and they've, like I said, they found her. And one of her children said when they entered the house, they said, quote, I could see where her suitcase was there with the tags on it. Butch is her son. He told ABC News, and they saw her purse and her cell phone was missing. So they searched the house and they eventually found her, like I said, her body in the driveway. Now, Linda had video cameras around her home. But police, when they arrived and started looking over the scene, they found that all of the video cameras were gone, had been destroyed.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So they thought it was definitely foul play. Obviously, she had been they thought they had reported that she was shot. But then upon examination, they realized she had been stabbed multiple times. So they called in witnesses. Apparently, they talked to Becky, and Becky said that Linda had been dating a man that, like, that was kind of from her past, you know, old flame, and they had started, you know, seeing each other again. And she said that the last time she saw Linda, they had had an argument a little bit because Linda was upset that he hadn't returned her call. Like right away, her text. And so she was like, maybe he's seeing somebody else. And Linda was like, don't be so, basically, don't be thirsty. Right. Like, just it's not a big deal. Like, you know. So she said that they kind of like argued about that. But then she left and she didn't even think of anything of it. And she said she had been back and she just sometimes she hadn't thought anything of it because sometimes Linda would be mad at her and wouldn't talk to her for like a week. And she basically kind of called her a drama queen, basically. Right. So, but as investigators started going through everything, and a good investigator was like, okay, the cameras are missing. So unbeknownst to Becky, investigators were able to pull backup video footage that showed her holding a bloody knife, putting it in her purse. So basically the backup footage, so she had taken the camera out, but it was still recording. She put it in her bag and she came over in full view with the knife.
Oh my God.
And put it in the bag and took the camera away.
Oh my God.
And then on the outside, they also had footage of somebody showing up in a blanket trying to cover their identity going into the house.
Oh my God.
So, and it also on the video, they heard a woman scream before they saw Becky appear.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So she covered it up, but the backup video when it was still recording. So I think, but I bet you what happened is that she took it out thinking, oh, that'll stop the recording. And it continued a little bit, or it went, before she destroyed it, it basically backed up to the cloud.
Yes.
And that's what they were able to pull.
Oh my God.
But she didn't know that at the time. So, because initially, again, they interviewed her and she was like, oh yeah, I came over there and we argued about a guy, what have you. So she, at first, Becky was like, oh, the guy she was dating was a man named Rendell.
Okay.
And so she was like, oh yeah, Rendell may have done it. Maybe she was jealous because she's trying to make Linda seem kind of desperate and thirsty and jealous. Right. And then she was like, oh, maybe it's Philip, her ex-husband, because he hated Linda. And Linda did tell her friend, Tim, Becky's fiance, that Phil probably would kill her because they had a very nasty divorce by all accounts.
Okay.
But so at first they arrested her. But at first she was like, no, it wasn't me. It was them. And maybe it was Rendell. Maybe it was Philip. It was Phil. Maybe. So she pleaded not guilty. But they put her on remand in jail.
Okay.
And while she was in jail, she was like, I'm innocent. I feel like they're setting me up. Phil is setting me up because he's a judge, or he used to be a judge. He's doing all this stuff. It's a conspiracy against me. That's what she was saying.
Okay.
And she was also telling Tim this, who was totally on her side. He was calling her. He was like, it was because he was upset with the way they had arrested her. They pulled their AR-15s. And he was like, really? Is it all? Do you guys need to really do all that so publicly? He thought they were railroading her. And there's if you go online, there's like video footage of him talking to her on the video while she was in jail. And she's just like, yeah, like think about it. Like, this is a conspiracy. Like, this goes bigger. Like, and then they kept changing prosecutors. I will say, around Linda's murder, because she was a politician.
Right.
And a beloved politician, even as a Republican, a beloved politician.
Okay.
And because it's Arkansas, of course, the Clintons' name get pulled in. And they're like, why are they changing prosecutors? Why is this? Oh, this must go to the highest level. Linda must have known something.
The deepest of states. Yes. Yes.
And there's Becky feeding off, fanning all of that. And Tim is eating it up. And he was like being her champion. And he's like, I'm going to stand by her. He was like, in one interview, he's like, either she just didn't do this or she's the best actress in the world.
Well,
turned out right. So Tim is like defending her. But later on, and they weren't sharing any information with him. Later on, authorities finally, they came to him and they asked him to sign like a non-disclosure agreement. He was like, what? And they let him in on what was going on. Which and is? They showed him the video. And he confronted her. And he was very upset, because not only, think about it, he's been made a fool of by his fiance, but his fiance killed,
like, his best friend.
His really good friend. Yeah. From childhood.
Oh my God.
And has been lying to him for months. Also, Becky is a piece of work.
Yeah.
Also, while she was in jail. So again, so let me back up just a little bit. So what's the motive, you think, right?
Yeah.
So the motive, family members, her two children, Linda's two children, think that they believe that Becky was stealing money from their mother's motel business and their grandfather's account, because they said that they had seen, basically she was signing Linda's name and taking money even out of their grandfather's account.
Oh, damn.
And they feel like that, they think that Linda confronted Becky and Becky snapped and in a rage killed her. And they think, or an act to cover it up. Also, later on, Phil, the ex-husband, did say that there was gold coins missing. Like, oh, they had really? A collection of gold coins. So he actually, he says that, I don't know how much of this is true, but he says that he actually told Linda, and that could have been the thing that Linda then confronted her with. And again, but they think they're not really sure because they could never really find concrete evidence on exactly what it was. But they think that she had been stealing from her, and Linda actually found out because when she was working, when she was a state senator, she didn't have time. She was very busy.
Yeah,
and that's
why
she needed people she could trust. But now that she was back, she can actually look over the books. She had more time that she was just looking for a job. And she, and then especially when the grandfather's account, that was just like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, so they think that that's, authorities think, and her children think, and Linda's children think that that's what happened. They say that they think she has stole, that she had stolen up to about $50,000.
Damn, Becky, you a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so now, okay, so she's in jail. She's on remand. She doesn't have a bond because this is murder, right? They suspect her of like cold-hearted murder. But because they didn't really have a motive and they didn't have the murder weapon, they felt like if they went to court and try and get the death penalty, they wouldn't be able to prove it.
Okay.
So they needed her to make a deal, basically.
Okay.
So she was like, no, I'm innocent. Somebody's out to get me. You know, she was holding in line like she's this conspiracies. It's and she's so believable in this video when she's talking to Tim. Like, she's just like, I don't know what's happening. And then, like I said, in the news, they were like, oh, the Clintons, because it's Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
The Clintons are involved, right? And then also, for context, around the same time, another politician had been killed in a state nearby, had been killed. So they thought at one time that these two deaths were closely linked. That's why it took them a while to get to Becky. Because at first they thought, oh, are these connected? Because, I mean, you are a state senator. Like, that's a big deal.
Yes.
So, and to be stabbed so brutally, they thought that maybe it had been the same thing. But then once they ruled that out, and they're like, just keep it simple. Let's just look at. And then when they found somebody, finally looked through the footage, and they were like, oh, yeah.
Oh, Becky.
So.
Oh, girl.
Now, so she's in jail, but she's just like, I'm innocent. There's this conspiracy against me. So they charged her with capital murder, abuse of a corpse, and tampering with evidence. Okay. But again, she was like, I'm innocent. She's in jail. No bond. So while awaiting trial in jail, she started to talking to her cellmates. She was telling her cellmates, I'm innocent. I've been set up. They said she had pictures of Linda on her wall in her cell.
Oh, my God. Damn, she's dark. Okay.
She was saying, that's my best friend. Somebody killed my best friend and is framing me. And she also approached one cellmate, a woman by the name of Cassandra Giffrion, who later spoke with ABC News. And basically, Becky was like, I need you to kill Linda's ex-husband, because the judge, because he is definitely behind this. He's trying to frame me for killing my best friend. He's the only person powerful enough to do this.
So he needs to die.
Also, he needs to die.
Also, I'm not a murderer. Okay.
Right.
Cool, cool, cool.
Now, remember when her ex-husband, Jeff,
I do. I have not forgotten.
And Becky's not good at this. Like, she was talking to one. She got too much mouth. She was talking to one woman and then she became kind of paranoid that the woman would snitch on her. So then she talked to another cellmate to kill that woman because she thought the other woman would. She did this like three times.
Becky.
Two or three times.
Honey.
She's terrible at this.
Yeah, no.
All the while
telling
Tim, I've been set up. They're just against me. I'm persecuted. I've been set up. Like,
oh,
I just.
God.
Yeah. So, you know, at first prosecutors are like, okay, this is some jailhouse, like they're just snitching. This is not real. But what they did was they actually got proof from the inmates.
How?
To corroborate the story. So in the form of a forged suicide note that Becky had written pretending to be Phil. So basically, and then she had this elaborate thing where she told them it needs to happen on Halloween night. Because when you guys are out, you can be in costume and you can go over there and kill him and then leave this note.
Okay.
This suicide note. So she wrote
Phil's. So now they have this note. Great. Thank you for the evidence,
in her handwriting.
Wow, yeah. Becky.
So she has all these, like, she's been watching too many movies because she's really bad at this. It's like, you don't talk to more than one person about killing somebody else and then try and talk to the person about killing that person because you talk to them about killing somebody else. I don't know if she's just been watching too many movies, but she's very bad at, like, trying to cover this up. Now, again, so she's in jail awaiting murder. And then she's implicated on trying to hire somebody to kill a judge, in essence.
Yeah, yeah.
And the prosecutor. Then she looped him in. She's just, this woman thinks that she's Hannibal Lecter. I don't know what's going on. So once they got the evidence that she was trying to hire somebody, killer
jail,
while she's awaiting trial for another murder, they presented her with that and also of the video. And the look on her face when they show her the picture, the still shot of her holding the knife, putting it in her purse. Listeners, go and look that up. It is wow. Wow.
That is amazing.
Wow. So she's like, I need to see somebody. I'm going to change my plea. So, because that's also what they were waiting for, because they didn't think that they could prove they didn't think they could prove first degree murder.
Okay.
Because they also believe that it probably was in the spur of the moment, but they're not really sure. And that's why she botched the cleanup job.
She botched the cleanup job, but needed also the cameras.
The cameras, but they needed her to, because they couldn't find the murder weapon. So they needed her to confess or enter into a plea deal.
Right.
And part of the reason that she would do that is because they took the death penalty off the table.
Okay.
So she came clean and she told them that she actually did kill her friend. She said that I killed her and then tried to cover it up. So she admitted to that. She was convicted in August of 2020, so the following year, for the murder of Linda Collins Smith, and was sentenced to 50 years in prison.
Okay.
At that point, prosecutors were also able to clear Tim, because Tim was under suspicions too, as well as Phil, Linda's ex-husband.
Yeah.
You definitely always suspect the men first, but we know women are better at murder. Not at covering up murder and doing murder for hire, but definitely at murder. Now, she later pleaded no contest to the two counts of solicitation to commit capital murder.
Oops.
For murder for hire.
Right.
And she's currently imprisoned at a women's prison in Newport, Arkansas. Now, the exact prison is not known, and that's due to a state law within the within Arkansas to keep that anonymous.
Okay.
Now, this is a tragic, even if we're different than Linda politically, this is tragic.
The
fact that this woman was killed, brutally murdered in her own home by her friend.
It is a tragedy. I think that's the correct word, that her children found her. It's horrific.
It is horrific. Tate is her daughter and Butch is her son. And Butch was like, I will never get that image out of my head of finding my mother wrapped in like a blanket from my childhood.
Like
terrible. Now, of this, I just always like to close out honoring victims.
Yeah.
You know, because even though Becky is my notorious woman, and boy, this is a doozy. This is crazy. This is stuff you couldn't. They probably make a movie about this, but it's too soon, about just stupid criminals. Anyway, so. After Becky O'Donnell was convicted and it was announced, the family, especially Tate and Butch, Linda's two children, came out and they issued a statement. And Tate, her daughter, said, quote, no amount of punishment will ever fill that void that Rebecca O'Donnell made in our lives the day she killed our mother.
Yeah.
She goes on to say, it will never bring my grandpa's daughter back, our mother back, or our children's grandmother back,
ugh,
end quote. And that is the crazy modern day story of Becky O'Donnell killing her best friend, the politician Linda Collins Smith.
I feel bad about shitting on Linda a little bit. I'm sorry about that. I just didn't like how she voted, but I don't think she deserved that. No.
But see, you know why I brought that up too? No, she definitely didn't deserve to be murdered.
It's awful.
But the thing is that we are so fighting against each other so much because the other side is crazy. I'm sorry. MAGAs are crazy at this point. And if you're part of the problem, you are a Borg. So anyway, the real enemy is more around you and it's probably on your side because all these people had the same political leanings.
Yeah.
Rebecca, yeah. Oh, Tim, absolutely. Linda.
Oh.
They're all Republicans. They're all like conservative, guns,
right?
Anti-abortion, all of this. It's all in, and she was brutally murdered over, it came down to fucking money.
Yeah.
It came down to fucking money because I will say that Phil did say that later on, like, again, they haven't been able to prove that she stole the money, but they did trace that she had gone out of town and sold some gold coins at a pawn shop because you have to give your ID.
Oh, yeah.
And they totaled, she did it three different times and it totaled about $12,000.
Oh, damn.
She definitely did forge Linda's name on the grandfather's account to take money out. But she said that she was taking money out because Linda didn't have any money. Since losing her seat, she didn't have any money. So she was taking the money out to pay Linda's bills. But you're stealing from Linda to pay Linda's bills?
Also, what's crazy to me with a thing I can't wrap my head around is that you'd have been much better off being like, I stole from you. And make up some shit from there. Couldn't pay your bills. Go on, go to jail for a year. You stole. She probably.
But see, I think that Linda knew.
And Linda might not have even prosecuted her because they were friends.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because Linda seemed like a super decent person. Like, you know.
Yeah, I think if Linda, I mean, who knows? But I think because Linda came from a humble background, she may have been like, you having money problems, but maybe Becky was stealing maybe it's way more than $50,000.
Right. Because like, that's not the kind of money. Like, did you steal millions? Did you ruin grandpa? Like, you know, should you be running in Mexico right now to, you know, avoid authorities? Although I've read that the Mexican police are very good at catching Americans. Boy,
but I think also that I don't think Linda is good at thinking things through.
There you go.
And she seems like the type of person that would definitely think in the moment, oh, I have to push her. I have this, like, not thinking in the moment. Like right. You said, like, I'm so sorry. I just needed the money. I don't, you know, da da da. Like, I'll pay you back. Like, just flipping out in the moment. She definitely seems like the type. The fact that she didn't take the camera outside off, she just came back with a blanket over her head.
Yeah,
because she didn't think that they had the camera of it in her purse. She didn't think that was. She thought she had disabled that.
Right.
But the fact that it's just like she didn't think this thing through. And then the son, Butch said once he came to see his mom, and Becky was there. And being like, oh, and he's like, she pretended like, oh, I haven't talked to her either. She kept coming back to clean up. And then she didn't clean up very well because they said when they went in, they saw like a smudge mark on the bottle of bleach.
Damn.
So she's very bad at this murder. So I think it was definitely spur of the moment, it seems. But I definitely think it was financially motivated. And she just didn't think things through.
Yeah.
And then when she killed her, it just went into mode to cover it up. But the fact
what do you hate?
I hate the fact that she's trying to throw these men under the bus.
Yeah.
And I know, like, ding, ding, ding. You guys better enjoy this while it lasts because I don't usually give guys a lot of breaks. But the fact that these innocent guys, because they actually called in Rendell, the guy she was dating.
Oh.
And he said that they had spent the night, to, you know, and he had left in the morning. And like, but he was like, Yeah. He's like, you know, and he admitted like Linda had more money than him and like, but they love to line dance and like just a regular, you know, Republican couple. But the fact that she was trying to get, throw him under the bus and Phil, the ex-husband, under the bus, who's just minding their own business.
Yeah. She sucks.
And
she
then
sucks
lied
hard.
The way she lied to Tim.
Yeah.
The way she lied to Tim.
Damn.
Oh, these people are after me. Mm-mm. That is what makes her a terrible,
she
notorious
is
woman.
Notorious in the negative way.
Yeah, because she's trying to throw people under the bus and then just lying.
I just can't get my head around, like, okay, someone who'll steal money.
Yeah.
Is that like a gateway crime to murder?
I don't
murder?
Think so, no.
I don't think no. so.
I don't think it's to murder. And then keep in mind, she then tried to have Phil killed while
yeah,
she
damn.
Was in prison,
damn. Yeah.
knowing how she had killed Linda.
Do you know what I wonder? I wonder what else she has done in her life that she got away with. Because this does not feel like a first-time situation. Okay.
She feels like the kind of person, too, if there were any black people in the area, she would have blamed it on the black dude, oh, some random black dude.
Absolutely. But unfortunately for her, it was yeah. her holding the bloody knife. So
yeah. But she's like a white guy would do. I'll blame it on a white guy.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Wow.
So that is my notorious woman.
That was insane. Listen, insane. Today's episode is definitely going to be of a theme. Okay.
Ooh, you have murder.
I have murder. Oh. This is fascinating. I never thought okay. I could one up you, but I
oh
I did. Like I did.
Oh
yeah.
This is a special episode.
Do you know the show Whitechapel?
Yes.
Okay, I've discovered it because remember I had COVID, so I couldn't go anywhere. I'm obsessed with it. It's so
yes.
good. Obviously,
Whitechapel is about yeah. the Jack the Ripper murders. That's where it happened.
Well, yes. It's the first season, but there's more seasons, Lovetta.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, there is.
So a name came up and I was like, wait, what? And I wrote it down. And then I did some research on a woman named Mary Ann Cotton. Ever heard of her?
Oh, I have heard of her.
She's notorious, girl. Okay.
Yes.
So let's
tell me. I've heard of her and I've thought about, I vaguely have glanced over. I know she's a murderess, like to the nth degree, but I don't know the specifics. So tell me.
So here we go. Mary Ann Robson was born on Halloween, October 31st, 1832. It was at Low Morsley, County Durham, which is like northeast England. Her mother's Margaret, her father's Michael. He's a colliery sinker, which is basically a coal miner, certain type of coal miner. So her sister Margaret was born in 1834, but she only lived a few months, and she also then had a brother named Robert, who did live, born in 1835. Now, when she was 8, her family moved to the County Durham village of Merton. So she went to a Sunday school there, and she was described as, quote, a most exemplary and regular attender. Also, quote, a girl of innocent disposition and average intelligence. And also, quote, distinguished for her particularly clean and tidy appearance. Okay. So, after they moved, her father fell to his death 150 feet down a mine shaft.
No.
Yeah. So, this was...
Oh, that's terrible.
1842. Oh. So, she was about 10. And it's just... Oh. I mean, the way that they did this shit back then, damn. Like, her father's body was delivered to her mother in a sack bearing the stamp... The stamp said, property of the South Hetton Coal Company.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible.
Now, the cottage they lived in was tied to his job. And since he no longer had a job because he was dead, they were then kicked out. because that's why we need social protections and we should vote for them. Okay, total side note. Anyways, so they were, I don't know what happened, but then a year later, her mother married again, another minor, George Stott. So at 16, Marianne left home to become a nurse at the nearby village of South Hetton, I don't know, Hetton. If we do it in a British accent, of course.
This is, it might be Hetton.
Hetton, South Hetton. In the home of Edward Potter. Okay, Potter. who was a manager at the Merton Colliery, which is, again, coal miner. So after all the three, I guess she was like a nurse for the children, his children. Mm. And then they all went to boarding school. So she came home and trained as a dressmaker. So her stepfather's home, right? So in 1852, she was 20 years old and she married a colliery. Why are they making me say this over and over again?
Coal miner.
A man named William Mowbray. And then they moved to Southwest England. Now, there were reports of four or five of their children dying. So we're cutting two while they were living away. None of those deaths are registered. And as far as I can tell, none of their births are registered either. So you had to register. It was the law, but they didn't enforce it until like 1874. So there was only one birth recorded, and that was their daughter, Margaret Jane. So, you know, it's a little suspicious. Interesting. Ugh. So Margaret Jane was born in 1856. Now, William and Marianne moved back to Northeast England, where William worked as a fireman aboard a steam vessel sailing out of Sunderland, and then as another coal miner, because I'm not saying that word again.
Yeah. Yeah, these people are struggling.
Yeah. So yeah. Isabella, another daughter, was born in 1858, and Margaret Jane died in 1860. Now, they had another daughter named her Margaret Jane. She was born in 1861. And then a son, John Robert William, born in 1863. But he died the next year from a gastric fever. Then William, the husband, died of an intestinal disorder in January 1865. So, interestingly, as something you brought up earlier, the lives of William and their children were insured by the British and Prudential Insurance Office. So she got £35, okay, on William's death, which was the equivalent of about £4,200, which was about half a year's wages.
Wow.
At the time. And then £2.05, I don't know, shillings, it said S, for John Robert William. £2, which is what, $100 now? Okay.
Wow.
Maybe it's $1,000. Okay.
But the thing is, when you're that poor,
yeah,
$4,500, I mean, $6,000, let's say it was what, 4,500 pounds? $6,000, $6,500. Dollars seems like a lot of money when you're that poor. It's not a lot of money, but it seems like at one time it seems like you're like, oh my god, I have this all at one time, versus like,
right,
but you are killing people. And I mean, if it was 6 million, I could see, listen, if John was sick,
listen,
you know, and sometimes, he ain't got, you know, he ain't got a lot of money. I mean, maybe he more valuable dead. I'm just, you know.
But this is not.
It's the children that gets me. I understand murdering the husband. I listen. It sounds like you have to just marry so you have a place to live. Who knows? Maybe it was a terrible husband. I don't know.
Well.
But the children.
Yeah. And she got like, life is, you know, it's priceless. But that said, £2? Okay. Jesus
But I
Christ.
Also think that I wonder, like, obviously people who do this just love to murder. Mm. But like, is there some sense of like, oh, I have control over something?
Right.
Whether a person lives or dies,
this
that's
woman,
part of the attraction.
She crazy. Because that, okay. that was husband number one, Anatan.
Mm-hmm.
So she moves to Seaham Harbor, Sheyam Harbor. I literally have no idea. County Durham, where she got into a romantic entanglement with a man named Joseph Natris. So during this time, her 3.5-year-old daughter, the second Margaret Jane, died of typhus fever, leaving her with one child out of the 9 that she had pushed through her body. Okay.
Wow.
So she returned to Sunderland, took up employment at the Sunderland Infirmary House of Recovery for the Cure of Contagious Fever Dispensary and Humane Society. What? Yeah. You heard me. That's where she worked.
Wow.
Okay. So she sent her surviving child to live with her mother. Okay. So one of her, let's keep going. One of her patients was an engineer named George Ward, and they got married in Monkwearmouth. I think I said that right.
Yeah.
On August 28th, 1865. Now, he continued to suffer his ill health and unfortunately died October 20th, 1866, after a long illness characterized by paralysis and, funny enough, intestinal problems. Interesting.
Mm.
So the death certificate said English cholera and typhoid. The attending doctor said that he had been ill, but he was getting better and was surprised by his sudden death. But don't worry, because she collected the insurance money. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
she's going to get that insurance on these people.
And she, you know, she's a woman who likes to be married. So she meets a man named James. James
Where
Robinson.
Where's she meeting all these men? Where can I find men I can kill for $1 million?
I don't.
Just keep going. And
listen.
Like, I mean, now people are on to you, but I would imagine people are on to you too if you're on your fourth husband.
I mean, well, it's three because she's hooked up with that other guy. But listen, I guess England, Northeast, what are you going to do? Or Northwest?
1860 something.
Yeah, you got to go back in
People
time.
Did die. People
oh,
did
yeah.
die.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was filthy.
Yeah, and that's how you got away with it. Because it was like, oh, a stomach, you must have looked at something funny, you know?
Yeah.
So James Robinson was a shipwright in Sunderland. His wife, Hannah, had recently died. He hired her as a housekeeper in November 1866. Now, a month later, his baby, John, died of gastric fever. Yeah,
oh,
she's
girl,
a horrible human.
She's so, just getting the baby out of the way to get
listen,
to him.
And he was like, I'm so upset. I must have sex with you. And she was like, okay, sounds good. And she gets pregnant. So, Then her mother, Marianne's mother, became ill with hepatitis. So she immediately went to her mother's side. Her mother began to recover, but unfortunately started complaining of stomach pains and then died at the age of 54, 9 days after Marianne arrived to help her, quote unquote.
Damn.
Yeah. Okay.
She's just killing it. She's just, oof.
So her daughter, remember, was living with her mother. Isabella was brought back to the Robinson household. She too soon developed stomach pains and died. And then two of his children, oh no, Elizabeth and James, also gone. What? They were all buried in the last week of April and the first week of May, 1867.
No.
She received life insurance payments of £5, 10 shillings and 6, I don't know, D's for Isabella. Okay. So James has no idea, marries her August 11th. Their first child dies 1868. Like they marry 1867, first child is born and then dies. Their second child, born June 18th, 1869. Now, he started to guess at some suspicions. Like, there's a five people he knows dead, right?
Yeah.
Because she kept insisting that he insure his life. And she was like, what? My life?
What's his name? John? Is it John again?
John.
John's like...
James. Sorry, James.
James. Yeah. James is like...
Yeah. And then he's like, wait, hold on. Discovers that she had run up debts of 60 pounds behind his back. That's like $10,000, right? And it's stolen
what
like...
What is she doing with that money?
I don't even know. Like, I don't even know. Wow. Like, living her best life. Like, She also stole, so she ran up those debts, but then she stole more than 50 pounds that she had been expected to bank, right? He was like, take this money, put it in the bank, and be a wife. And she was like, I'm just going to put it in my bra, you know.
Not my bra.
Then he found out that she'd been forcing his older children to pawn household valuables. So he threw her out and kept custody of their son, George. So they live. So,
I mean, it sounds like he was actually a man of some means, and
yeah, I think so.
Like a little bit more than the previous guys, right. And she still needs more and more and more money. What is she doing with the money?
I don't know. I don't even know. Like, she just crazy. Like, listen, so you know how I like to find justifications for people? I got nothing with Marianne Cotton. Nothing. She a bitch. She's crazy. Okay. She's, like, burn her. I'm good with that. All right. So every so often there's a person that shows up that I'm like, no, I have no sympathy. So she's desperate. She's living on the streets, and her friend, Margaret Cotton, introduces her to her brother, Frederick.
Oh, girl.
Now, he's a pitman, which I think it's like another thing they did in the 1860s in England. Okay. And
he's not a chimney sweep.
I don't know. Maybe
that was children.
Yeah, that was children. Exactly. And he recently lost his wife. And so he was living in Walbottle, Northumberland, which Northumberland is like Shakespeare things. So I can say it.
Yes.
And he had lost two of his four children already, right? Because, again, you get a cut, you die, right?
Yeah.
Wash your hands. They did not know. All right. So she acted as a loving substitute mother for the remaining children. But in late March, 1860.
Let me guess. One of the children died.
Yeah. But the good news is she was able to console the grieving father, and soon her 12th pregnancy was underway. What?
12 now, children?
Yes. Listen, remember, she's still married. James just kicked her out.
Oh, he didn't divorce her. Right. And he still got his life because he don't have life insurance.
That's right. So
she has control over.
Exactly. She's like, nope, can't do that. So they married bigamously because remember, you don't get money unless you're married. Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Oh, that's right.
You can't get a payout on your boyfriend. No.
Yeah.
Gotta be a husband.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're married. Their son, Robert, was born early 1871. Okay. Here's what happened. She discovers that her old boyfriend, Joseph, is living pretty close and was no longer married. So she was like, okay, let's get it on. And they start, you know, making out. And
hold on. Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay.
Listen. Yeah.
Man, my game with men is way off. So Mary has killed all these people. Oh, okay. James doesn't know.
No.
Moved on with this guy. He's married him.
Yeah.
He finds out she's stealing from him. He kicks her out. She goes and find another recent widower.
Yes.
And convinces him. convinces him to that she's not married. She's not attached. So she marries him. But not only is she married bigamously to him, but she's also stepping out on him. Okay.
Oh, not only is she stepping out on him, she convinces him to move near her lover. Yeah. So they up and move.
Yeah.
Okay. So then Anyways, fun fact. Oh no, her husband dies of gastric fever. But
her fake husband, her bigamous husband.
Her bigamous husband. But don't worry, because the insurance company did not double check and gave her the money. Yes, they did.
Of course they did.
So Joseph Natras then becomes her lodger. Because remember, he's dead. She still has the house. And she gained employment as a nurse for an excise officer who was recovering from smallpox. Now, okay, popular cultural sources called him John Quick Manning. But there's no trace of a John Quick Manning in the records.
It sounds like a very English name, though.
Doesn't it, though? But there is like a Richard Quick Mann, who was a custom and excise man specializing in breweries. And that, and this other guy, they said, you know, had a brewery. So they were like, that's probably it. Anyways, so she gets pregnant with him. His child.
You're kidding.
Baby. Well,
her former first lover is her lodger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So anyways, unfortunately, so they had lost the daughter. I really can't keep up. But then the son dies too, March 1872. Right. The Frederick Jr. Okay. And then their child together, the first child, like the, you know, Cotton's child dies, right? But then Natras, her lover, he dies just after revising his will in her favor. Isn't that interesting? Huh. So
she's basically, she doesn't want to, well, she wants her own money. And, but she doesn't even want to deal with the husband. Because if you have a good relationship, I would imagine, right, though, even though women have a lot of rights, your husband's giving you household money. And maybe that's why James caught on, because she was stealing that household money.
Now, listen, here's what I have to say. I have been pregnant one time in my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just once. Okay. And I didn't really want to do it again because it took a toll on literally everything, but mostly my body.
Because we've established you can die from a paper cut.
Right.
Back then.
So in the land of dirt everywhere and germ theory not having been discovered yet, she is putting a baby in her belly every other day to make her money and be cruel.
Yeah. She's literally using her pregnancies like a cash cow. Like, let me bake this one. Get it insured and then dispose of it.
Now, here's what finally happened. Okay, because she's going on and on. There's a parasite.
Before you say that.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say.
Yeah.
I'm not a conservative. That's not a big surprise. I'm not a MAGA. I'm not one of those people who are like, you know, let's control the population, but some people need to be sterilized. And if it was a person that needed to be sterilized, it's this bitch right here.
Listen,
like,
I know, like, sterilization of people as a general societal thing is bad, but sterilization,
I know morally it's not good. It's not our choice. It's her choice, but bitch.
No, Marianne Cotton needed to be hit over the head and then got her uterus pulled out of her. Okay? I'll say it. We can be conservative for a minute. Burn her uterus. Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Okay, I'm back
now. Sounds painful. They'll take it out of her first.
Listen, that bitch deserves it. Okay. Okay. So here's what happened. So there was a parish official, Thomas Riley, and he asked her to help nurse a woman who was ill with smallpox. Remember, she'd been working as a nurse since she was a kid. But she complained to him that the last surviving cotton boy, Charles Edward, was in the way. And so she asked Riley if he could be committed to the workhouse. Now, if you don't know what the workhouse was in England, it was half a step
terrible
up from dying of hunger on the streets, but only half a step up. Abuse, cruelty, you did what you had to do to protect your children from having to go to the workhouse.
Go to workhouse, yeah.
Yeah, that was the
worst.
So
she's getting cocky.
It's the opening to like, Oliver, you guys. It's the opening to Oliver, yeah. Okay? So she's getting cocky. And so the Thomas Riley was like, well, you just bring the kid with you. And she said, but he's sickly. And then she says, quote, I won't be troubled long. He'll go like all the rest of the Cottons. Okay. So 5 days later, she tells Thomas Riley that her boy had died. Oh, no. So
Thomas is like, something is up.
Thomas is like, okay, nah, I don't like this. So goes to the village police and persuades the doctor to delay writing the death certificate until the circumstances could be investigated because they never, ever suspected her until right now. Like no one has.
Because also she's a nurse, right? And you could literally just go 5 miles over another part of town,
right?
And have a whole
and
life.
No one else could get there because 1860s.
Yeah.
So they find out the first place she went to after he died was the insurance office, not the doctor. Okay. Then she discovered that no money would be paid out until a death certificate was issued. Okay, an inquest was held and the jury returned a verdict of natural causes. So she claimed to have been using arrowroot to relieve his illness and said that Riley was making these accusations because he hit on her and she said no. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then the local newspapers latched onto the story and discovered that she had moved around Northern England. And lost. This is how they found out. They investigated. She had lost 3 husbands, a lover, a friend, her mother, and 11 children, all who died of stomach fevers. Okay.
So she had 12 children?
13?
13 children,
well,
and the majority
11,
of them
yeah,
had died.
Died. Because remember, right, because she had, I don't know, because some were step children that she...
Yeah.
So this, they led a scientific investigation. So Dr. William Byers Kilburn, who had, taken care of Charles, kept samples and tests showed they contained arsenic. He told the police who arrested Marianne and procured the exhumation of Charles's body. So she was charged with his murder. I think she was pregnant. That's right. It was 12.
Oh, God.
She was pregnant with her 13th. So they delayed the trial until she gave birth. Little girl named Margaret Edith Quick Manning Cotton, a.k.a. the child who lives. The trial began but at essentially a courthouse on March 5th, 1873. So there was a delay caused by a problem in the selection of prosecution counsel. So a Mr. Aspinwall was the first considered, but the Attorney General, Sir John Duke Coleridge, whose decision it was, chose his friend and protege, Charles Russell. Now, I don't know if this was like for or against her.
It's a prosecutor?
Yeah.
So maybe it's... Okay.
His appointment over Aspinwall led to a question in the House of Commons, but it was accepted. He conducted the prosecution. And this was the first of several poisoning cases that happened in that era. The argument was that the kid died from inhaling arsenic used as a dye in the green wallpaper of the Cotton home.
Yeah. I mean, that was a thing, but he wouldn't ingest like
that much
tablespoon of it. It's just like
to die, right?
This bitch, she was basically using her womb as an ATM machine.
Yeah. 100%. That's exactly what she was doing.
Oh my God.
90 minutes later, the jury was like, "Oh yeah, she's guilty as fuck."
Yo.
Guilty AF, they said.
Wow.
This was, okay, the Times correspondent reported on March 20th, quote, after conviction, the wretched woman exhibited strong emotion, but but this gave place in a few hours to her habitual cold, reserved demeanor, and while she harbors a strong conviction that the royal clemency will be extended towards her, she staunchly asserts her innocence of the crime that she has been convicted of. End quote. So there were petitions presented, but to no avail, and they hung her in at the Durham County Gaol on March 24th, 1873, by William Calcraft. Now, she died, but not from her neck breaking. Strangulation, because the rope was rigged too short, possibly deliberately.
Oh.
You know what? I'm okay with
that. Can you imagine how outraged they were? I mean, yeah. I would be furious if I were the public.
Oh, yeah.
And under the guise of being a nurse.
Yep.
Having the men were probably more upset about the murders of the husbands and lovers.
Yeah, probably.
I would be upset about I would be upset about both, that somebody is perpetrating themselves as to help a sick person.
Oh, yeah.
And then she killed her mother. And the children would really just send me over the edge that she's killing children.
I'm not a pro death penalty person.
I am.
But listen, I think she should die a horrible death. I'm
sorry. Some motherfuckers need to be murked expeditiously. Let me turn it to TI or expeditiously.
I guess,
I don't know if that's appropriate to use.
I guess I'm against the death penalty because of our current, throw the wrong people in jail. Yeah.
Yeah, it's disproportionately used against black and brown people or poor white people, and not enough serial killers and rape women are getting it.
Right.
It's just,
this bitch needed to go. I'm not going to lie. Bye.
Because this is so premeditated. And this is not like a terrible accident where two teenagers are robbing somebody and they shoot somebody and accidentally kill somebody. Right. It's not that. And I'm not making excuses for that. So please do not write in about that. But I'm talking about premeditated serial murder for profit.
Yes. I mean, the only kids who survived were her last child because she was on trial and they probably whisked that baby away, right? And she lived a decent life. And her son George, because James kept custody of him.
I bet James is like, whoo, I dodged a bullet.
Damn.
I'm not a religious man, but Lord Jesus.
I am now.
Just like, because you get an inkling about somebody and you're like, oh, why she keeps asking? Because she had to do it smooth. When are you going to get life insurance? I'm your wife. I'm going to need something in case something happens to you.
Baby.
You know, I've had this tragedy in the past and I was left destitute. She put it on thick.
Yeah.
I always wonder, because the pictures I see of her, she looks very menacing, but she had to be a good looking woman,
I think, but the pictures of her, it's like she has lasers coming out of her eyes.
Right. I feel like that's the newspapers taking license because they know she's a cold-hearted murderer. But
right.
She kept attracting all these men. Men are very simple, though.
They're
especially
stupid.
If they're mourning. Oh, all you got to do is just be
I'll
take
vulnerable.
Care of your baby.
I'll take care. I love your children like my own. And I have boobs you can touch,
Yeah. Okay, I feel bad for these guys because this is a person that's making your tea, your food, it's just poisoning you at every step of the way. Wow.
It's crazy, right?
That bitch.
She a bitch. So many bitches today. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so to get our minds off of the election, we talk about murder. Yeah, these were good.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
You got it.
And thank you guys for joining us for the latest episode of Notorious Women Podcast. That's going to wrap it up. Remember to follow us on all the things.
Yeah.
Also, remember to give us a five-star review in the Apple Store. That will help people find us. I'm still out of town, but when I get back and get situated, we're going to start reading the reviews again. So please do that so we can read your review, your new review, your five-star review when we come back. And also, programming note, we will be taking next week off.
Yes.
We just have some scheduling things that are going on. So we're going to do a repeat show that you guys are going to love, we think. So But again, please tell your friends and your families about us. Share our podcast. Copy the link and send it to them. Don't just tell them about it.
Yep.
Copy the link and send it to them. You can also support the show at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
You guys can follow us on all the things. We are at Instagram, Notorious Women Podcast. Come join us. Talk to us.
Yes.
We also have TikTok as well. And we have YouTube, Notorious. It's all Notorious Women Podcast. So go to there, YouTube. You can listen to episodes there too if you want to. And you can email us. So if you have longer things you want to talk to us about, we are notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we will see you in 2 weeks for a new show. I might have some things to get off my chest. Like, I'm like, you know, I got a lot going on here, so I got to focus. I got to be an adult. Oh, adulting sucks.
It's stupid.
Sucks balls.
I agree.
But hopefully you guys enjoyed this murder. Okay, we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.